Chapter 55. Mercury prompting, Fledgeby deserved Mr. Alfred Lammel's eulogium. He was the meanest cur existing, with a single pair of legs. And instinct, a word we all clearly understand, going largely on four legs, and reason always on two. Meanness on four legs never attains the perfection of meanness on two. The father of this young gentleman had been a money lender, who had transacted professional business with the mother of this young gentleman, when he, the latter, was waiting in the vast dark antechambers of the present world to be born. The lady, a widow, being unable to pay the money lender, married him, and in due course, Fledgeby was summoned out of the vast dark antechambers to come, and be presented to the Registrar General. Rather a curious speculation, how Fledgeby would otherwise have disposed of his leisure until doomsday. Fledgeby's mother offended her family by marrying Fledgeby's father. It is one of the easiest achievements in life, to offend your family, when your family want to get rid of you. Fledgeby's mother's family had been very much offended with her for being poor, and broke with her for becoming comparatively rich. Fledgeby's mother's family was the Snigsworth family. She had even the high honor to be cousin to Lord Snigsworth, so many times removed, that the noble earl would have had no compunction in removing her one time more, and dropping her clean outside the cousinly pale, but cousin for all that. Among her prematrimonial transactions with Fledgeby's father, Fledgeby's mother had raised money of him at a great disadvantage on a certain reversionary interest. The reversion falling in soon after they were married, Fledgeby's father laid hold of the cash for his separate use and benefit. This led to subjective differences of opinion, not to say objective interchanges of bootjacks, backgammon boards, and other such domestic missiles, between Fledgeby's father and Fledgeby's mother, and those led to Fledgeby's mother spending as much money as she could, and to Fledgeby's father doing all he couldn't to restrain her. Fledgeby's childhood had been, in consequence, a stormy one. But the winds and the waves had gone down in the grave, and Fledgeby flourished alone. He lived in chambers in the Albany, did Fledgeby, and maintained a spruce appearance. But his youthful fire was all composed of sparks from the grindstone, and as the sparks flew off, went out, and never warmed anything, be sure that Fledgeby had his tools at the grindstone, and turned it with a wary eye. Mr. Alfred Lammel came round to the Albany to breakfast with Fledgeby. Present on the table, one scanty pot of tea, one scanty loaf, two scanty pats of butter, two scanty rashers of bacon, two pitiful eggs, and an abundance of handsome china, bought a second-hand bargain. What did you think of Georgina? Asked Mr. Lammel. Why, I'll tell you, said Fledgeby, very deliberately. Do, my boy. You misunderstand me, said Fledgeby. I don't mean I'll tell you that. I mean I'll tell you something else. Tell me anything, old fellow. But there you misunderstand me again, said Fledgeby. I mean I'll tell you nothing. Mr. Lammel sparkled at him, but frowned at him too. Look here, said Fledgeby. You're deep and you're ready. Whether I am deep or not, never mind. I am not ready. But I can do one thing, Lammel, I can hold my tongue. And I intend always doing it. You are a long-headed fellow, Fledgeby. Maybe, or may not be. If I am a short-tongued fellow, it may amount to the same thing. Now, Lammel, I am never going to answer questions. My dear fellow, it was the simplest question in the world. Never mind. It seemed so, but things are not always what they seem. I saw a man examined as a witness in Westminster Hall. Questions put to him seemed the simplest in the world, but turned out to be anything rather than that, after he had answered them. Very well. Then he should have held his tongue. If he had held his tongue, he would have kept out of scrapes that he got into. Apostrophe, if I had held my tongue, you would never have seen the subject of my question. Apostrophe, remarked Lammel, darkening. Now, Lammel, apostrophe said Fascination Fledgeby, calmly feeling for his whisker, it won't do. I won't be led on into a discussion. I can't manage a discussion. But I can manage to hold my tongue. Apostrophe, can? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Lammy fell back upon propitiation. I should think you could. Why, when these fellows of our acquaintance drink, and you drink with them, the more talkative they get, the more silent you get. The more they let out, the more you keep in. Apostrophe, I don't object, Lammel, apostrophe, returned Fledgeby, with an internal chuckle, to being understood, though I object to being questioned. That certainly is the way I do it. Apostrophe, and when all the rest of us are discussing our ventures, none of us ever know what a single venture of yours is. Apostrophe, apostrophe, and none of you ever will from me, Lammel, apostrophe, replied Fledgeby, with another internal chuckle. That certainly is the way I do it. Apostrophe, why of course it is, I know. Apostrophe, apostrophe, rejoined Lammel, with a flourish of frankness, and a laugh, and stretching out his hands, as if to show the universe a remarkable man in Fledgeby. If I hadn't known it of my Fledgeby, should I have proposed our little compact of advantage to my Fledgeby? Apostrophe, apostrophe, ah. Apostrophe, apostrophe, remarked Fascination, shaking his head slyly. But I am not to be guided in that way. I am not vain. That sort of vanity don't pay, Lammel. No, no, no. Compliments only make me hold my tongue the more. Apostrophe, Alfred Lammel pushed his plate away.
No great sacrifice under the circumstances of there being so little in it.
Thrust his hands in his pockets, leaned back in his chair, and contemplated Fledgeby in silence. Then he slowly released his left hand from its pocket, and made that push of his whiskers, still contemplating him in silence. Then he slowly broke silence, and slowly said, "What the devil is this fellow about this morning? Apostrophe, apostrophe, now, look here, Lammel, apostrophe said Fascination Fledgeby, with the meanest of twinkles in his meanest of eyes, which were too near together, by the way. Look here, Lammel, I am very well aware that I didn't show to advantage last night, and that you and your wife, who, I consider, is a very clever woman and an agreeable woman, did. I am not calculated to show to advantage under that sort of circumstances. I know very well you two did show to advantage, and managed capitally. But don't you on that account come talking to me, as if I was your doll and puppet, because I am not." And all this, apostrophe cried Alfred, after studying with a look the meanness, that was fain to have the meanest help, and yet was so mean, as to turn upon it. All this because of one simple natural question. Apostrophe, apostrophe, you should have waited till I thought proper to say something about it of myself. I don't like your coming over me with your Georginas, as if you was her proprietor and mine too. Apostrophe, well, when you are in the gracious mind to say anything about it of yourself, apostrophe, retorted Lammel, pray do. Apostrophe, I have done it. I have said you managed capitally. You and your wife both. If you will go on managing capitally, I'll go on doing my part. Only don't crow. Apostrophe, I crow. Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed Lammel, shrugging his shoulders. Or, apostrophe, pursue the other, or take it in your head, that people are your puppets, because they don't come out to advantage at the particular moments when you do, with the assistance of a very clever and agreeable wife. All the rest keep on doing, and let Mrs. Lammel keep on doing. Now, I have held my tongue when I thought proper, and I have spoken when I thought proper, and there's an end of that. And now the question is, apostrophe proceeded Fledgeby, with the greatest reluctance, will you have another egg? Apostrophe, apostrophe, no, I won't, apostrophe said Lammel, shortly. Perhaps you're right, and will find yourself better without it, apostrophe replied Fascination, in greatly improved spirits. To ask you if you'll have another rasher would be unmeaning flattery, for it would make you thirsty all day. Will you have some more bread and butter? No, I won't, repeated Lammel. Then I will, said Fascination. And it was not a mere retort for the sound's sake, but was a cheerful, cogent consequence of the refusal, for if Lammel had applied himself again to the loaf, it would have been so heavily visited, in Fletcherby's opinion, as to demand abstinence from bread, on his part, for the remainder of that meal at least, if not for the whole of the next. Whether this young gentleman, for he was but 23, combined with the miserly vice of an old man, any of the open-handed vices of a young one, was a moot point, so very honorably did he keep his own counsel. He was sensible of the value of appearances as an investment, and liked to dress well, but he drove a bargain for every movable about him, from the coat on his back to the china on his breakfast table, and every bargain by representing somebody's ruin or somebody's loss, acquired a peculiar charm for him. It was a part of his avarice to take, within narrow bounds, long odds at races. If he won, he drove harder bargains. If he lost, he half-starved himself until next time. Why money should be so precious to an ass too dull, and mean to exchange it for any other satisfaction, is strange, but there is no animal so sure to get laden with it, as the ass who sees nothing written on the face of the earth and sky, but the three letters 50. SD not luxury, sensuality, dissoluteness, which they often stand for, but the three dry letters. Your concentrated fox is seldom comparable to your concentrated ass in money breeding. Fascination Fletcherby feigned to be a young gentleman living on his means, but was known secretly to be a kind of outlaw in the bill broking line, and to put money out at high interest in various ways. His circle of familiar acquaintance, from Mr. Lammel round, all had a touch of the outlaw, as to their rovings, in the merry greenwood of Jobbery Forest, lying on the outskirts of the share market and the stock exchange. I suppose you, Lammel, said Fletcherby, eating his bread and butter, always did go in for female society? Always, replied Lammel, glooming considerably under his late treatment. Came natural to you, eh? Said Fletcherby. The sex were pleased to like me, sir, said Lammel sulkily, but with the air of a man who had not been able to help himself. Made a pretty good thing of marrying, didn't you? Asked Fletcherby. The other smiled an ugly smile, and tapped one tap upon his nose. My late governor made a mess of it, said Fletcherby. But Gier is the right name, Georgina or Georgina. Georgina. I was thinking yesterday, I didn't know there was such a name. I thought it must end in Inna. Why? Why, you play if you can the concertina, you know, replied Fletcherby, meditating very slowly. And you have when you catch it the scarlatina. And you can come down from a balloon in a parish, no you can't though. Well, say Georgude, I mean Georgina. You were going to remark of Georgina? Lammel moodily hinted, after waiting in vain. I was going to remark of Georgina, sir, said Fletcherby, not at all pleased to be reminded of his having forgotten it, that she don't seem to be violent. Don't seem to be of the pitching in order. She has the gentleness of the dove, Mr. Fletcherby. Of course he will say so, replied Fletcherby, sharpening, the moment his interest was touched by another. But you know, the real lookout is this. What I say, not what you say. I say having my late governor, and my late mother in my eye, that Georgina don't seem to be of the pitching in order. The respected Mr. Lammel was a bully, by nature and by usual practice. Perceiving, as Fletcherby's affronts cumulated, that conciliation by no means answered the purpose here. He now directed a scowling look into Fledgeby's small eyes for the effect of the opposite treatment. Satisfied by what he saw there, he burst into a violent passion, and struck his hand upon the table, making the china ring and dance. "You are a very offensive fellow, sir," apostrophe cried Mr. Lammle, rising. "You are a highly offensive scoundrel. What do you mean by this behavior? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I say. Apostrophe, apostrophe," remonstrated Fledgeby. "Don't break out. Apostrophe, you are a very offensive fellow, sir," apostrophe repeated Mr. Lammle. "You are a highly offensive scoundrel. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I say, you know. Apostrophe, apostrophe," urged Fledgeby, quailing. "Why, you coarse and vulgar vagabond. Apostrophe, apostrophe," said Mr. Lammle, looking fiercely about him, "if your servant was here to give me sixpence of your money, to get my boots cleaned afterwards, for you are not worth the expenditure, I'd kick you. Apostrophe, no you wouldn't," apostrophe pleaded Fledgeby. "I am sure you'd think better of it. Apostrophe, I tell you what, Mr. Fledgeby," apostrophe said Lammle, advancing on him. "Since you presume to contradict me, I'll assert myself a little. Give me your nose." Apostrophe, apostrophe, Fledgeby covered it with his hand instead, and said, retreating, "I beg you won't." Apostrophe, apostrophe, "Give me your nose, sir," apostrophe repeated Lammle. Still covering that feature and backing, Mr. Fledgeby reiterated, "Gutenberg edition." End of chapter.